We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic. On the web at theracingbiz.com. On the radio, on ESPN Richmond, it's Off to the Races. Here's Nick Hahn.
Little French-Canadian music to start our day on Off to the Races this morning. Thought it would be appropriate as we interview the Hall of Famer himself, who you heard in the opening, delivering the win and the Triple Crown in the 1973 Belmont Stakes. Ron Turcott will be our guest on Off to the Races in about 10 minutes or so. This will be a taped interview. I talked to him late in the week, and just a great interview, and it really shows the courage and the gratefulness that Ron Turcott has for being the jockey of Secretariat. We'll speak with Debbie Warnick in a few moments of the Virginia Harness Horsemen's Association, have her explain the residency program. Not many may be aware of this, but the residency program that has been so successful in Virginia for thoroughbreds, there's also a very similar program for harness horses. So we'll talk to her a little bit about that in a few moments. Frank Vespi is living the dream, and someone who is really living the dream is Nick Dillodovico. I'm going to have a hard time saying that throughout the show. Try and say it along with me. Dillodovico, new trainer at on the Maryland racing circuit. His dad, Damon Dillodovico, trained DeFrancis Dash winners LaKey and Immortal Eyes back in 2013. So Randolph College soccer, I didn't realize he was an ODAC guy. Randolph College soccer player, now training horses. And Frank will have that interview in the second half hour of the show. And of course, Derby Bill Watson will join us to handicap the races. If you want to handicap races at Churchill Downs, you better do it this weekend because they are moving the meet. We'll have a little bit about that here in a few moments as well. Last night, racing started early this weekend at Penn National, just outside of Grantsville, Pennsylvania, which is just northeast of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The Penn National racetrack there had the Penn Mile, a $400,000 stakes race, a big lead up for the Virginia Derby and the Secretariat Stakes that'll be held at Colonial Downs this summer. Those two $500,000 stakes races, part of the three-year-old scheduled on the turf. Just traditionally, that's what racing at Colonial Downs or stakes racing has been. It's been those three-year-old turf races, and with those races returning the prominence, we're focused on the three-year-old turf horses moving through. Larry Kalmus was at Penn National last night to call the races. The Penn Mile had an eight-horse field. Major Dude, who almost got into the Kentucky Derby, behind enemy lines, was a second choice in this race. Candidate, with Trevor McCarthy aboard, was a horse that's just been competitive in many stakes races, been racing at a very high level. Larry Kalmus gives us the call of the Penn Mile.
And they're into the stretch. Behind enemy lines, the leader. Major Dude needs to do better. Recruiter is down toward the inside. Behind enemy lines, Major Dude runs at him. Major Dude, how good is he? Major Dude behind enemy lines. Major Dude and Errat Ortiz do it in the Penn Mile.
The Dude did it with Errat Ortiz aboard, gets the win, and only paid a lot of chalky winners at Penn National yesterday. If you were looking for long shots, you didn't find too many of them there. Major Dude paid $2.80 on that $2 win ticket. Behind enemy lines held on for second, and then Fletcher, finally a long shot, got third. So Major Dude, the big winner for Todd Pletcher's barn, Spendthrift Farm LLC. Congratulations to those connections, and Major Dude just was a big horse at Penn National last night. And just to recap, we don't have the call for this, but the Penn Oaks, Molly Moo was the upset winner there. $24.20 for the three-year-old filly on the turf going a mile. So congratulations to Jack Sisterson's horse, Trevor McCarthy, getting the win there. So congratulations to them. Want to bring on now in our leadoff spot, Debbie Warnick joins us with the Virginia Harness Horsemen's Harness Horsemen's Association on Off to the Races this morning. And good morning, Debbie. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's just recap the meet at Shenandoah Downs and maybe look ahead a little bit towards the meet at that will be in the fall at Shenandoah Downs, just a town that has embraced your harness racing there and has just seemed to be a growing bud when it comes to racing in Virginia. Tell us a little bit about the meets there and then also about the certified residency program.
Okay. Well, we had our first ever spring meet, which finished up Mother's Day, and we went for 7 weeks, and it was very successful. We had a lot of horsemen and a lot of horses participate, and as you mentioned, the fans in Woodstock are just the best ever. They supported us. It was a little rainy every weekend, so it wasn't quite as good as we would like it to be, but we're looking forward to the fall meet, which will start September 16th and go for another 7 weeks. Hopefully the weather gods are going to smile and we won't have quite as much rain then. So we're looking forward to that.
And then the residency program, how it is, because this is a key time. It's up until May 1st, July 1st, that harness horses can become eligible for this with the six-month residency requirement. Tell us how that works.
Right. What it is, we call it the Certified Standardbred Residency Program, and we started it with the fall of 2019, and it's designed to bring horses from out of state. So you don't have to have any ties to Virginia. You just have to have a foal come and stay in Virginia for 6 months before January of its two-year-old year. So as you mentioned, for the foals of last year, that would be July 1st of this year. If they're in the state by then they're eligible. And the way the program works is there's a pool of money of $400,000 that they race for as two-year-olds and then again as three-year-olds. And there's a point system that is devised. When your horse races, no matter where it races at, it doesn't have to be in Virginia, no matter where it races at, it gets points for every dollar it earns in purse earnings. There's some limits on big races, but you get a point. And then at the end of the year, we add up the points for all the horses that were eligible for the program that race, and we divide that $400,000 by the number of points, so then every point becomes worth a dollar value. And then your horse gets paid based upon how many points it earned.
And then it's an incentive program similar to the Thoroughbred. Tell us a little bit about the Stallion series as well. It's starting to come to life here as the seasons go.
Yeah, we're excited about that. We started with the Sired Stakes program last year, so those babies are just being born this year, the first crop of them. It's a traditional stallion-based program. There were the first year we had 13 stallions stand in Virginia. This year we have 20 stallions stand, so it seems to be growing in popularity. And they'll race in as a two-year-old, three-year-old for purses of $60,000 with the eliminations of $6,000 each. And we're really hoping that that program is going to take off and complement our Breeders' Fund program, which is the program that we have always had. And there are some overlaps in the programs, but the programs are three completely distinctly separate programs. Being in one doesn't necessarily mean you're in the other one, but they do overlap some.
Yeah, so incentive programs, and to find out more, you can go on to vhha.net. Talking with Debbie Warnick, who is the executive director of the Virginia Harness Horse Association. Are you in Saluda this morning?
Yes, I am.
In Saluda. I actually worked in Saluda for about 2.5 years. Not a big town, but certainly a beautiful place. Go ahead.
It's not very big. We've got three red lights now. It is growing, but it's not very big. That's true.
That's great. Well, Debbie, we appreciate you coming on with us on Off to the Races this morning. We look very much forward to the fall meet. The spring meet was a blast, and it's just really a good atmosphere, good country atmosphere up there in Woodstock, Virginia, in the upper Shenandoah Valley. Can't wait for the fall meet to begin again.
Thank you very much. We hope to see everybody out there.
Great. Debbie Warnick joining us from Saluda, Virginia, just there in Middlesex County. Used to make that trip from New Kent across the bridge into West Point almost on a daily basis. So just a nice drive out there. Probably hadn't changed that much. Want to just share a couple of announcements that were made overnight. The biggest one is that Churchill Downs is moving their meet. They will be racing throughout the weekend at Churchill Downs, and actually held a couple of breezes. I saw this morning where Brad Cox actually worked some of his Belmont horses at Churchill this morning, but with the number of injuries and fatalities that have occurred there in the last 12 months, and just the way this is being chased by industry doctors, professionals, veterinarians, the powers that be decided it would be in the best interest to start the meet at Ellis Park early. So starting next week, racing will be held at Ellis Park starting on they'll suspend the meet at Churchill June 7th. So they do have a full card today, and we'll handicap them. I can tell you without trying to get too aroused with the drama surrounding these horse fatalities, that this is being sought into these issues. It's been very frustrating has been the word between all the professionals that are looking at this at a very microscopic, literally microscopic cellular level to find out. The randomness is just caused everything to be scrutinized at Churchill Downs, from environmental factors to all kinds of different research that's being done on the surfaces. It's just has not been attributable to one thing. There just has not been a smoking gun, and it could just be sort of a random number thing. But it has been impactful, and so the meet will be suspended at Churchill, and they will move on looking for better results at Ellis Park. At Churchill, they have done a number of things that even began well before this. This has been a continuous effort to try and find the causes of this, and it began several decades ago, but they started tracking it in 2009, shortly after the Eight Bells incident in the Kentucky Derby of 2008. Numbers have improved. That's something that doesn't get covered very often in the media, but there's been actually a 37.5% betterment in terms of these breakdowns, which horses that go to the track return without incident over 99.8% of the time. That's a number that's actually close to getting to 99.9%. So there's some fallacies that get reported, especially in the local news, which largely I think gets duped into some of this sensational reporting. And there's some actors that will never be satisfied with the results. At Colonial, there's only been one fatality over the last 4 years. One of the safest, and I'm trying not to tempt fate here, but one of the safest records, if not the safest in the country. So we will continue to track this and certainly hope for improving results in the future. But Moving ahead here, let's catch up with maybe a more significant, a better moment for horse racing for sure, as Ron Turcotte gave me some time earlier in the week, late during the week, to discuss the Belmont Stakes, his legacy, and just a number of items. I just started off asking Ron Turcotte in this upcoming interview how he was doing.
Oh, I'm doing all right. Not good enough to travel, but I'm doing all right.
That's great to hear. You've been so gracious with your time on our show, Off to the Races, over the years, especially on Belmont Stakes Day, or as Belmont Stakes Day approaches. This being the 50th anniversary, how is this one, especially in regard to media attention, been different for you?
Well, I'm awful busy this week, all week, from a different interview from different places. They had celebrated in town here. It don't seem that long to me.
What do you remember about the 3 weeks between the Preakness and the Belmont Stakes?
Penny, a little more, put Penny on edge a little bit, and Lucian maybe. I don't know, me, I was getting on the horse. I was working him and all his work out like I did throughout the Triple Crown, and I was very confident I was going to win, and we just passed the Preakness, and he just galloped there and came out good out of the race. And I wasn't thinking about it. It was just nice to see him on all them covers.
Certainly just a phenomenal time in horse racing and nationally. One of the other items that I discovered was the Kurt Gowdy show, The Way It Was. And in the show, you are being interviewed alongside Eddie Arcaro, who wrote Citation to his Triple Crown. And I want to play just a clip from the show.
Of course, you would be the best to answer, because you rode Citation and you saw Secretariat. In your opinion, if they were both three-year-olds, every condition the same, and we put them on the track together, who would have won?
I don't think you can answer that, Kurt, and be knowledgeable about it. I mean, that's great barroom talk. You know, you can argue forever who was the best. Longdon is a very good friend of mine. He tells me Count Fleet was the greatest. Shoemaker tells me Swaps was the greatest. Ron is going to tell you that Secretariat was the greatest, and I'm going to tell you Citation was the greatest. So that you could, that's a matter of opinion. I will say this, though. I don't think that any horse could have beaten Secretariat in the on Belmont Day. I've never seen a horse do the things that he did that day.
It must be pretty satisfying to have Eddie Arcaro say that Secretariat could not have been beaten by any horse on that Belmont Stakes Day.
Yeah, it was very satisfying. He was there throughout the three races, Eddie Arcaro. I spoke with him before going to the jockey's room in Kentucky. And so I knew that he had seen the three races personally, and he really thought very high of Secretariat, but he didn't want to say anything because he was friends with the Joneses and didn't want to insult them.
One of the things I saw in the movie, the Canadian-made movie, they show you with Jean Kruger. Do you talk to him in French or do you talk to him in English?
Well, he's hard to understand. They're in French. His French and my French is not the same. And same thing in English.
Do you get a chance to talk to many of the jockeys, either of this era or the era when you rode?
Oh, yes, I do. I do. I spoke a lot with Eddie Arcaro. Like, you know, when we were there taping that, there we had. We stayed in the same room at the hotel. We've spoken a lot. And like I said, he was there to see the race, and we had breakfast together before I went to the jockey's room.
This is in regard to Reaver Ridge, who won two Triple Crown races in 1972 before Secretariat. How important was Riva Ridge in terms of the eventuality of Secretariat winning the Triple Crown?
Well, I'll tell you where he was very, very, how should I say that? Without him, we might not have, Middle Stable might not have been able to keep Secretariat. So he saved the farm. Riva Ridge saved the farm. And I love him dearly. He was a beautiful horse to ride. And after I got on him, I had four races. I was beaten twice and won two races. And after I got on him, he won the rest of the year without a defeat and became the richest two-year-old in, I think it was at the time. So yeah. He saved the farm. He saved the farm.
You were one of 12 children. I didn't realize that until I saw this Canadian-made movie that I really recommend everybody to look at. It just provides such a wonderful background on you and really shows your personality. How was your introduction into racing? Could you have seen yourself doing anything else once you got involved other than being a jockey?
I got along real good with horses, and from the time I was 14 years old, I worked with horses in the lumber. So I was, a very thorough horseman. I was really interested in training horses when I retired.
Bill Knack mentions that, talks about how you would have been an excellent trainer. He mentions that in that film, and you can see that in that film. I'd really recommend everybody to take a look at that. What are you looking forward to on Belmont Stakes Day?
Oh, I spend my day pretty well in front of the TV, listening to what they all have to say and watch the race. I think that there's not much speed in the race, so it's probably be the same horse that won the Preakness that will take the lead. And I don't expect to see another horse winning by 31 lengths and running in 224.
He is going to be the Triple Crown winner. Here comes Secretariat to the wire. An unbelievable, an amazing performance. He hits the finish 25 lengths in front.
Well, he was supernatural horse anyway. He was one of a kind. Don't believe it. I know for sure. I'll never see one of them come up that good. He was everything. Oh, we got along real good. I guess we were the perfect partner.
How critical is it, that partnership between horse and jockey?
Well, it's a good thing for a jockey to get on the horse in the morning for their workout, getting ready, whether it be the Derby or the Preakness or the Belmont. Yeah, I was working them, Riva Ridge and Secretariat. I was doing all their workouts before their big races. So, matter of fact, before all of their races, I was doing all their workouts. So that gives a jockey an edge when it comes to the race. You can't get his horses. They know each other better. They trust you more.
Not including the about 15 or 20 autographs that you've signed for me. How many autographs do you think you've signed in your lifetime?
Oh, my God. I couldn't even tell you for one year. More than a million, I'll tell you that for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I thank you for the dozen or so that you did for me. Thank you for being our guest today.
You're welcome.
Ron Turcotte on Off to the Races this morning. Just hearing that interview, a lot of people joke that anybody could have been on the back of Secretariat and won the Triple Crown, and that may be so, but we're so fortunate it was Ron Turcotte, because he's just such a great ambassador to the game. The word courage comes up to me when you think about Turcotte and the way he has handled his setback, becoming paralyzed in 1978. He is grateful. I really recommend everybody to take a look at that film. If you want to find out, take it's about an hour long watch. It's called Ron Turcotte, Secretariat's Jockey. It was made by a Canadian company, And it really is great footage. It gives you great insight to his personality. And there's something to be said about opportunity, because you would see Ron Turcotte was a worm farmer, and he was washing dishes. He was trying to make some sort of living after being a lumberjack in rural Canada. Goes to Toronto and basically has already told his dad he was going to move back because he couldn't make it. And the last thing he tried was hot walking horses. And that was his entry into the horse racing industry. Where would Secretariat and the Triple Crown be without him now? So he gave you his pick for the Belmont Stakes, who is National Treasure. So we'll follow up on his handicapping. By the way, he mentioned in that piece that he got on the horses leading up to the big races in the morning. So does Javier Castellano, who rode Arcangelo earlier this week at Belmont Park. So that's the mount. We have a field of 10 that looks like they're going to line up for the Belmont Stakes. National Treasure, Forte, who breezed at Belmont. This is the horse by the Virginia breeder Amy Moore. Angel of Empire is coming back. He just breezed at Churchill Downs this morning with Flavian Pratt aboard for Brad Cox. Il Miracolo will run in the Belmont Stakes. He is shipping in today from Gulfstream to Belmont Park. Tappet Shoes, Jose Ortiz, will get that mount. He ships Monday. Red Route 1 will be there. Hit Show, who actually finished fifth in the Derby, will be there as well in the Belmont Stakes. Raise Kane, who was eighth in the Derby, the Gotham winner, and then Tappet Trice, who of course won the Bluegrass and the Tampa Bay Derby, will be there as well. So 10 horses as we see it now headed for the Belmont Stakes, which will air on Fox. Tom Hammond actually will do the call of the race for Fox. Television coverage begins Thursday, 3 o'clock, with Fox Sports 2. On Friday, they'll have Fox Sports 2 starting at 12:30, switching around a little bit. The Belmont Stakes post is at 6:50 on Saturday. Fox will pick up that coverage at 4:30 and carry it till, actually at 4 and carry it till 7:30. Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2 on both ends of that coverage. So plenty of coverage from New York next week for the test of a champion, the Belmont Stakes. We're going to go to break on Off to the Races. On the other side, Frank Vespi has a conversation with Nick Dillo DeVico, who is a new trainer, but not a new family to Maryland Racing. You're listening to Off to the Races, powered by the Racing Biz. Virginia's horse racing and horse breeding industry is built on the talents, skills, labors, and passions of incredible people working in all parts of the Commonwealth. Horses fuel the economy, power tourism, reinforce agriculture, and create jobs. From farmers to blacksmiths, trainers to vets, and racehorse staff to surrounding small businesses, the local horse racing and breeding industry alone supports 5,300 jobs and has an overall economic impact of $542 million annually. Over 5,400 horses are owned by Virginians, and another 2,400 out-of-state horses are boarded at Virginia farms. Last year, over $4 billion was wagered on horse racing in Virginia. Learn more about this thriving agribusiness at virginiahorseracing.com. And be sure to enjoy the Colonial Downs Summer Thoroughbred Racing Season in New Kent, which runs from July 13th through September 9th, every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday afternoon at 1:30.
Live racing at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races rolls on every Wednesday through Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern through March 1st, and every Thursday through Saturday through the month of October. Mark your calendars for Friday, August 25th, for the 15th renewals of the Grade 2 $1 million Charlestown Classic and Grade 3 $750,000 Charlestown Oaks, now the richest three-year-old filly sprint stakes race in North America. So come see us here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. Learn more at HollywoodCasinoCharlestown.com.
Live Thoroughbred Horse Racing returns to Colonial Downs this summer starting July 13th. Catch all the action on Colonial Downs' nationally renowned Secretariat Turf Course every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Post time is 1:30 p.m. Colonial Downs Racetrack is open to all ages. Parking and general admission are free. Reserve grandstand seats start at just $5. Get your tickets today at Ticketmaster.com.
And we're back on Off to the Races, living the dream. It's good to know we have listeners because I've mentioned Tom Hammond calling races. Actually, I meant Tom Durkin. Got the wrong Tom there. But Tom Durkin will call the races, coming back to call his first Belmont Stakes since 2014. Frank Vespi spoke with an emerging trainer, might be an understatement. Nick Dillodovico has won four of his first nine starts on the Maryland racing circuit. And Frank spoke with him late last night to talk about how that feels. He asked him what it was like to win four of his first nine.
The best way you can start off as a trainer record, I think, in especially in this country, win percentage matters a lot. And you know, the lion's share of the purse goes to the winners. You can always make an excuse for a horse, and a pretty good excuse, when they run fifth and sixth and they've made a really good effort. And I think that's part of, you know, learning how to deal with the sport too, because you can go on long stints where horses are running well but the results aren't coming in like you would hope, and you know, there's frustrated owners, you start to doubt yourself a little bit. But you really couldn't ask for a better start. And I'm actually, and to not, even though this interview is me, but the situation I stepped into, the people that are working underneath me right now, you know, took me into their arms and have really kind of performed at a level that I'm really surprised, because I set a high bar.
Well, let's talk about the situation you stepped into. You're training horses for Lynn Cash's Built Right Stables. He had been the trainer of record in general for his own horses, although he has a somewhat far-flung operation with horses here and in Kentucky, and he'll go anywhere with a horse to run a horse. He'll go to West Virginia, Louisiana, wherever he can find a spot.
And loves action.
Yeah. No, it's clear from the way he handles the stable. And I mean, he has Beverly Park, who made 30 starts last year. So
beast.
He likes to run them. But talk about how this relationship came to be. You were working for your mom and dad in the barn, and now you're here.
He moved into Maryland, and I remember seeing him in the program a little bit, and I was kind of curious who this Norman Cash guy was, despite the fact he goes by Lynn, and that's what I call him. Moved in the barn, had a guy working for him, and they were finding a little bit of success, but my mom kept like elbowing me and saying, you know, you could move into that situation, you could really do well. And that was almost a year ago, and it stuck in my head. And just recently, maybe a month and a half ago, the assistant trainer ran into some rough times, made some poor decisions, and it left the door open, and I got Mr. Cash's number, and I called him, and I said, without being disrespectful to anybody, that I truly thought that with the quality of horses that he has in the barn, the money that, you know, he invests in the game, that I think that he could get better results. And we spoke for a little bit. We had a really nice lunch at the Red Hot and Blue on Main Street Laurel, and we really kicked it
off.
They
are not one of our advertisers.
They
though.
Should
so
be.
So we have nothing to say about them beyond that.
And we just kicked it off. I think I kind of have two sides of me. One side, I'm very much into the horses. Like, I love being hands-on. I'm like really passionate about horses in general, like they're my friends. But on the other side, I really enjoy the statistics and the data that's behind horse racing, and just that common ground, the stats. Like, we really hit it off, and you know, even last night we almost talked for an hour about stats and different horses. And it's just been, so far it's been a really good relationship. I think we work really well together.
Now, your father, Damon, is a longtime trainer. He's a two-time winner of the DeFrancis Dash with Lakai and Immortalize.
Record holder at Charlestown for 4.5.
Immortalize was, that was one of the, when he won the DeFrancis, that was
beautiful.
Such a cool moment with Bobby Abbo, who was very sick at the time.
I was at Rosecroft. The horse might have been 10 or 20 to 1.
Yeah,
and
he was
I remember my best friend from high school was, we were trying to get him a job at Rosecroft, which is a standardbred track, if anybody doesn't know. And we're over there, and I gave him $100 because I was actually working at the time, and I was like, you need to run downstairs, and you need to bet Immortalize in this race. And I ended up winning the race and cashing the check. But just being proud of Dad because, you know, I think that Mr. Albo was kind of a demanding person, and he was the owner of that horse, and I think that because that horse was starting to get older in age, there was always like that latent pressure to, you know, retire horses like that. And my dad has a really strong belief that, you know, when you give them time and you're really patient, you know, these horses can really perform and run huge and run super competitive numbers, super competitive times if given the time.
Which he ran huge that day. Your father, the work he did with Immortal was really a fantastic job.
He won like 28 races, I think.
Yeah, he won over $1 million.
He would close at Charlestown going 4.5 at 8 lengths out, which is really impressive.
It's
really
almost impossible to do at 4.5. What I wanted to ask is, so your father Damon's been a trainer of record for a long time. Your mother Chris works in the barn with Damon. They've been a team for a long time. But you were not a barn rat as a kid. It was more later in life that you came to racing. Talk about how that came about.
So my parents wanted me to stay away from the racetrack. I think to them, having a really good education and going to school, being more involved in sports would be a better option for me, even though I got in trouble constantly in middle school and high school. I just couldn't shut my mouth. But, you know, on the weekends, I would come to Bowie because my dad had horses at Bowie before they closed down that facility. By the way, never lost the racetrack. Great spot. And I just have this very nostalgic feeling, you know, of just kind of the smell of the racetrack, you know, Saturdays and Sunday mornings. And I don't know how that happened because I was into a lot of different things. You know, I played college soccer. I really thought my life would kind of go in a different direction. But I think because of the amount of work that my dad did to kind of like help secure my family, and I idolized that, and, you know, my mother's worth ethic, it kind of kept drawing me back. And I got to dealing with horses. You know, it took me, my mother did not let me touch a horse. I've worked in the barn and I hot walked for a full year before I ever was able to go into a stall with the horse. She was very rigid and very demanding on that side of things. But once I got in the stall and I started rubbing on horses, you know, I really kind of got, I was moved by them as animals and as, you know, their own thing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they have their own personalities. They're very loving. Some of them don't like you. Some of them, you know, do anything. And they all come out here and they do this sport. And it's kind of, it's moving in a lot of ways. You know, when you see, like, you know, I cried when Lakai won the DeFrancis Dash because it just meant so. Not just, like, what it meant to us in the barn, but because of, like, his effort in the event. You know what I'm, it's just,
no,
it's hard to put in words the companionship and the connection that you can have with a racehorse.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And I've often thought, I mean, one of the things that racing has not done well is it's sort of like it appeals to, you know, certain bettors, of which I am one. It appeals
to sometimes
certain horse lovers, but what racing has sort of missed is like it lives at the intersection of humans and horses. And like the thing you, I think you're talking about is you honor what they give,
absolutely,
which is so much of what they have. And like if there's a way to bottle that and show it to people, I think a lot of, you know, PETA or whatever, the groups that are anti-horse racing be like, oh, I didn't quite understand that.
You know, it's funny because I had the opportunity. So, like, Mom always loved horses. You know, my dad has a really good hand with horses, and some people definitely have a special touch. But I've met some, like, really good grooms. One guy, his name was Tommy Lee Edwards. He was out of Louisiana. I met him when I worked for Tom Morley, and he loved hugging horses. As silly as that might sound, and you could kind of see that connection, and his horses always ran really well for him. And I think that, you know, we're always, some of the best stories in life aren't always, you know, at the Breeders' Cup and stuff like that. Some of these horses that exist on the backside at Pimlico or maybe at Hawthorne, you know, they mean a lot to people. And just because of that connection, like if you're having a bad day, you want to go talk to a horse, you know, you're going to have a good conversation. He or she might not say much back. But however, just by paying attention to them and stuff like that, you're going to have a really strong connection to the point where, you know, after working, even if it's your first time working for a month, I've had tons of people that have very little experience. They jump in, within a month, they're telling me how this horse feels. Like, he's having a bad day. And you're like, oh, well, that was interesting, because you didn't think they could have bad days a month ago.
Right.
You know, and so that's, you know, and to bottle that up, like you said, and to present it to the public, I think is really hard, because you have to experience it. It's like having a family dog. You know, Dad was talking to me not too long ago. We try to run our horses aggressively, and we try to win races, and we're just having, for lack of better words, a heart-to-heart, and we're like, you know, these guys want us to win races, and we do, but they also want us to sacrifice a lot of family events, vacations, holidays, in order to be there for the horses all the time, and then they ask us to sell them or to run them aggressively, and not to get on the touchy subject of claiming, because I think it serves a really good purpose, and we've made and done super well. I think my dad's made his career on claiming for the most part. But it does feel like you lose a family member when a horse leaves the barn, even if they're retired and they go.
Nick Dillodovico actually here on Off to the Races. I'm not sure if he is aware of it or not, but Frank can tell us. It just must be a fresh, just a wind of fresh air to hear Nick Dillodovico having such a great start at Laurel this year. Frank joins us now on Off to the Races. And Frank, although his family was involved in racing, his father, Damon Dillodovico, won the DeFrancis Dash twice. This has got to be refreshing up in Maryland to see a young guy entering into the business and having so much success so early.
Yeah, you know, Nick, and good morning. It there's, you know, a little bit of the changing of the guard going on in Maryland right now. You know, some of the older trainers have been around a long time. You know, Dale Capuano retired. King Leatherberry's out of horses. You know, some of these guys are either retiring or transitioning to different things. And then you get trainers like Nick and Brittany Russell and Lacey Gaudette. So you're seeing kind of a younger generation come up and the older generation start to move on to the next chapter. So it's an interesting moment to see that happen. And as you know, racing is very often a family affair. And, you know, Nick's father, Damon, is a trainer. His mother, Christine, works in the barn with Damon. Damon also works for International Sound, who does the audiovisual for a lot of racetracks, including Maryland. His brother, Damon, Nick's brother, Damon, also works for International Sound. So there's just a lot of kind of family piece to this. And you know, on top of that, the whole Lynn Cash, we've had him on this show previously. His operation is one of the most interesting operations in Maryland, I think, too. So there's a lot of some neat elements to this story.
In the ever ongoing column that I'm about to write but never seems to get done, which is everything that I was told about racing has turned up wrong. This exhibits it as well as anything in the fact that I was always under the belief that racing was run by a bunch of orphans, you know, by people that had nowhere else to go but the racetrack. It's actually quite the opposite. It's about the most family-oriented industry that I'm around. I mean, it's just amazing, and to see this changing of the guard, as you referred to it, it's got to be refreshing up in Maryland. Frank, we're going to – one note about the show. We don't announce this enough, but when the meet starts at Colonial Downs, we're going to be moving to 2 hours. Can't wait to do that so we can bring more stories like the interview you just did. And then up in Baltimore on 1570 AM Baltimore Positive, the Maryland-based show is running as well.
That's right, Nick. We're currently 10 to 11. Actually, today we're going to be aired twice, 10 to 11 and 11 to 12, and we may be shifting to the 11 to 12 hour, waiting for some things to come together and see whether that's going to happen. But yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting to add the second hour for during the Colonial meet, which is coming up really fast. It's exciting to be on the air in Maryland and in Virginia and share some of the content back and forth as we have done, and also bring some a little bit different perspective to Virginia and to Maryland. So it's fun. It's fun. It's exciting. And we appreciate the support of the VEA and many other folks in Virginia, as well as all of the listeners.
Yeah, 1:30, the post time for the meet at Colonial Downs, starting July 13th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday this year. Remember, the big shift from early week to late week, and 9 weeks of racing. Frank, great interview, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Nick. Have a great day.
Derby Bill up next on Off to the Races, and great job there with the interview, living the dream. And some of the feature races that we'll be handicapping here with Derby Bill, the Pennine Ridge is today. Just checking some of the weather in New York, the high temperature 69 degrees with only a 3% chance of rain. That's good. In Louisville, 93 degrees, 0% chance of rain, where Churchill would be doing their what turns out to be their closing weekend of racing. Up in New Jersey, good weather as well. They run the New Jersey Derby up at Monmouth Park today, so a good racing weekend that started early with the Penn Mile yesterday. And reaching out here for Derby Bill, let's give him his proper introduction, see what kind of bumper music he brings to the show this week. I guess this is Metallica. The heavy weight of handicapping is also the heavy weight of heavy metal. King Nothing. Not exactly sure what the angle is here, but he joins us now on Off to the Races. Good morning, King Derby Bill. Why King Nothing this week? And Derby Bill?
Yeah, sorry, I had to rock it up a little bit. Rock it up for you. Headbang. Bang Frank and Year's head together and get things rolling. A lot of steaks on the grill this weekend.
Steaks on the grill, yeah. The King. Why King Nothing this week?
King of Nothing. That's the new song by Virginia Tech's band. And I named the song after me, King of Nothing.
Derby Bill joining us on Off to the Races this morning, of course, in his anchor spot. And let's get to it. Handicapping the let's start. What do you want to start? The Pennine Ridge up at Belmont Park today?
That's fine. Pennine Ridge, Churchill, all sorts of racetracks. Go ahead with the Pennine's 200K. So it's, not the biggest money, but it's a great turf race.
And yeah, it's a grade two. And I did check for changes about 5 minutes ago, and I did not see anything up yet. But certainly the horse to watch in this race, at least as far as I'm concerned, is Far Bridge. This is a horse that is sired by English Channel out of Phil Pitcher, who is a Kitten's Joy mare. So this has Virginia Derby written all over it, and the horse almost won the American Turf. So certainly a promising horse. Joel Rosario aboard in this field. But then you have Belluani, who won the Woodhaven at Aqueduct. You have a new shooter coming in with Sharar, making his first start. He's coming in from Dubai. Just a lot of quality. This is going to be a nice race later today. Mile and an eighth at Belmont Park today.
Well, that's stacked up. Charlie Appleby is the key for me, shipping in Silver Knot here. You know, they might get a little better odds than Fairbridge, but not much. Those two are definitely the class of this race. And Appleby, we know, I'm watching the Epsom Derby today. The biggest turf race in the world was won by Aiden O'Brien and Ryan Moore. And hopefully they'll be coming to Colonial along with Mr. Appleby for the first time for the August 12th Arlington Million Day. So I'm going to stick with Silver Knot here and have to borrow 50 from you to make any money because he's probably 2-1 or less. Your horse probably be the same thing. Those two will go off about, and it should go off, shoot, $5. So $5 if either one of them wins. So you're going to have to go deep in the wallet there, Nick. But hard to beat them two, and I hope they both make Colonial Downs.
Yeah, no, that would be great to see those two in New Kent this summer. Let's go to Churchill next and maybe start with the Blame, which is a mile and an eighth. This is an eight-horse field. Power Medina, who ran in the Kentucky Derby last year, is in this group. You also have Barber Road, who's another Kentucky Derby starter, coming into this race as well. I mean, pretty similar in terms of the field size. Rattle and Roll just won the Pimlico Special very impressively in that. Just when I say very impressively, the finish was impressive because it was, you just didn't know whether it was speed bias or Rattle and Roll at the wire. It was an impressive work by the track photographer. And then you have Mask Parade in this race as well. So lots of horses to choose from in the Blame, a grade three today at Churchill Downs, a mile and an eighth.
Yeah, Churchill has stakes 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And you blindsided me with using the ass end of my pick four. So to speak, and race going to the rear, the race 10, the last race of the stakes series. Rattle and Roll out of the Kentucky Derby, obviously a clear choice, will be the favorite, and you got to try to beat him, like you said, with Mask Parade is an interesting one there. He's definitely going to hit the board, I think. He's been flirting around with being a Rattle and Roll type horse, top tier, and 5-1, so you know, I'm going to go with the 5-1, you know, maybe win place on Mask Parade in the last stakes race of the day at Church.
Kind of keeping on that angle and moving backwards here. The Arlington is today at Churchill Downs. Kind of ironic that they run this race at Churchill Downs. One of the former we just saw the demo permit. Some of the demolition work has been started at Arlington Park. It's still a little disturbing. I'll get over it. But the Arlington will be run today. This is a mile and an eighth on the turf. Pretty much the same conditions, $225,000 in purse money. And Kentucky Ghost is a horse I know that you're tracking. One of your favorite horses seems to keep coming up in your analysis all the time. Set pieces in this race for Brad Cox. And then, you got Get Smoking in this group as well. But Classic Causeway, this is a horse that ran 11th in the Kentucky Derby, now on the turf. Tried Oaklawn a little bit with mixed results, but going to come back to the turf here, Giant's Causeway for Ken McPeak, who's a pretty much a regular guest on this show. What are your thoughts in the Arlington today?
Yeah, the Stephen Foster preview day at Ellis Park we'll have to put into this grid so we can get the Arlington Stakes as a preparation for the Arlington Million later at Colonial Downs. As you mentioned, Classic Causeway trying to dirt. Switch the dirt to turf is the biggest faux pas there. I'm not going to He's going to need a race on turf for me to bet him at a low price. Kentucky Ghost, always a good long shot to get hit the board. The set piece, 8-5, looks like the best horse in the race, so I'm going to try to beat him. Does that make any sense to you? Royal Patronage. I'm going to go with Royal Patronage. Yeah, you might get, $8 for this horse, so Royal Patronage. There is one scratch in this race, Tiberius Mercurus, if I pronounce that right. If I didn't, who cares? 10-1.
Number four
is out of the race, and there's one scratch. The biggest scratch is the next race up. We'll move up to the next race for you, Nick, real quick. Race
Go 8, ahead.
Shawnee Stakes, the favorite's out. Pauline's Pearl, big scratch there. 5-2, top pick of just about every handicapper in the country. So that one lights it up wide open, except for Frost Point, which will probably be the favorite now in the Shawnee. But Pauline's Pearl scratches. Don't know why.
Okay. Hidden Connection is in that race. That's a horse that broke his maiden at Colonial Downs. Bill, just maybe a quick thought here in the late moments of the show about the Belmont Stakes next weekend.
Yeah, I got the pre-odds. Forte is looking good and bright for the people around here. 3-1 should be the favorite. He scratched in the Derby, not because he wanted to, but he scratched. But Cap and Trace will be right there with him, 4-1. Angel Empire, 4-1. National Treasure will not be the favorite. I mean, he will not, coming back out of the Preakness, but to break Frank Vespi's heart there a little bit there. But all them horses are going to, the top four. It looks like a very, very good race, Nick, as far as gambling. I mean, nobody's going to go up at 9-5 this year, after Mage disappointed in the Preakness. You're looking at least $10 for a winner, possibly, here, out of them four.
Yeah.
And great some shots behind him. Red Root One's an interesting one at 20-1. If they had a Belmont, early Belmont future bet, I'd put it on Red Root One.
There you go. Derby Bill, thanks a lot. We'll recap the stakes races on before that run on Friday. Enjoy the coverage, everybody. A little Billy Joel that sends us off to the races. We'll talk to you next week. Next week, this time, we'll be handicapping. We'll be in the middle of the Belmont Stakes Festival. I want to thank everybody. Debbie Warnick, Ron Turcott, Nick Dillo DeVico, Frank Vespi, and, of course, Derby Bill. Talk to you next week, post time, 10 o'clock.